This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So this is a nice little gritty role for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I mean, was that, when you read the script, is that something that definitely jumped out?
Sure. Yeah. It was nice. It was nice playing something, a supporting role. It was nice kind of just being a piece to the puzzle. And it was nice thinking about what David could do with the script, because the word gritty comes to mind. He's great at kind of making that kind of authentic street feel, especially given his background. I figured he'd be the right guy for the job.
Did you get to visit some neighborhoods that you might not have visited otherwise?
Yeah. Yes. I did a ride along with an LAPD officer, and we went all over the place.
What was that like? What did you learn on the ride along? Because I've done those, and
He has some pretty crazy stories. The thing that really resonated with me was how much he hated dirty cops. All the cops that I spoke with, I guess in my head I just assumed that corruption was something that kind of was inevitable among police.
It goes with the job.
This goes with the job. You know, you have to figure these guys. I mean, everyone has heard horror stories, but these cops were just, you know, I mean, maybe they just got a bad rap and they're sick of it, and they just want to kind of give that illusion. But the cops that I spoke with, the cops that were on set, and the one I did my ride along with, they just, you know, they'd ball their fists up, and you could really feel the hatred they had for a dirty cop. It's like the worst thing to be.
Is that why they participated in the production? I mean, like, Gates is in the movie or something. It seemed very odd.
Is Gates in the movie? Really?
Isn't it the police commission?
I didn't know that.
Isn't it the real one? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but...
The house?
No, but the funeral scene where he comes out, and I thought it was...
Oh, really?
Anyway, so did it seem odd that they were participating? Like, because it is...
Sure.
It's over the top.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely has, you know, Rampart written all over it, but... I don't know. I think a lot of these cops had respect for Dave. Truthfully, David really seems to understand cops, appreciate cops, and respect the fact that these guys are still putting their lives on the line every day. And, you know, some are dirty, but some are pretty clean. And these cops on set seem to just be happy to be a part of a story that was showing. I think these cops were just happy that we were holding our guns correctly. You know, it wasn't. I don't even know if they read the script. It was more about make sure, you know, you say this, stand this way, your feet are positioned here, never do that, and that was the stuff they were really, really excited about.
What was it like working with Keanu?
He's great, man. He really is great. I mean, he's the kind of actor that I love to work with. He loves rehearsal. I love rehearsal. I know a lot of actors that don't care for it, which, you know, it's fine. I'm a huge believer in it. I think it's, in my opinion, I think it's necessary. I can't even believe that some productions don't bother with it. Keanu will rehearse as long as you want to rehearse. Yeah, I think every single one of his lines he has thought out. Him and David and I would sit down, and I mean, it really got to a point where I was like, Keanu, that's just, you're just saying goodbye. Just say goodbye and just walk away. It's fine. You don't have to. But he really, really is, he's determined, and he's set on making sense of everything, which it's very giving when you're on set.
What did you learn about him as a guy? Because he's kind of a quiet, mellow energy kind of guy.
Yeah, that's what he is. He's very centered. I think he's very present. I think he's very uncompromising. It's really refreshing meeting someone who you can't push him off balance. Nothing you do or say, whether he's talking to me, a 26-year-old whitest kid in the room, or someone like Common, you know, or Cedric, he's Keanu. He's not going to try and change who he is for anybody. And I think that's rare in anyone, anywhere.
Did you grow up watching Bill and Ted?
Bill and Ted's, Point Break, you name it. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Speed. I loved all those movies. So, yeah, it was pretty exciting meeting him.
I was thinking,
oh, you guys are so polite. The other room, it's like, shh.
You were talking about the three of you kind of get it. But what is, you know, we know Keanu. What does David say? Does he kind of step back and let you guys talk, or does he kind of?
David's great. David's our anchor. He's our sounding board. He's the one who kind of has invested the most in the story. And since he is such a storyteller, he's a writer first. You know, I think there's no question you have that he can't. Fine, you know, if you say, Dave, I don't know if I would say this. He's like, all right, okay, well then, let's say when you woke up this morning, let's say your alarm didn't go off, so you're already late. And he'll just have this whole, he can just, out of nowhere, invent this entire backstory that somehow fits what's going on the page. And if the audience never even picks it up, you as an actor have a more layered internal dialogue. There's a lot more going on. Now, you know, before we started shooting, he went and took acting classes. You know, and not a lot of directors would do that. I think he loves the acting process, and he respects it. And you know, it's great to have that on set. I think Keanu and I both benefited from that. He really, you know, between takes, he'll just kind of walk up to you and just kind of look at you and size you up, and you're like, "What? Shit? What?" And he's like, "Okay." Just walks away.
Wow.
This guy just wants to make sure that you are in it. You know, from the time you show up on set to the time you leave, get your head right. And you know, his is always on. So it's wonderful. It was a great environment to act in.
What are the kinds of challenges you're looking for as an actor? Because you've done the sort of big budget blockbuster kind of things, and then I'm sure this was a choice. You had reasons that you wanted to do this.
Yeah.
You could have probably taken a bigger payday for a blow-up movie.
Sure.
So how are you kind of charting your career path right now?
I want to go where the good directors are. At the end of the day, I want to be a part of good movies. Because you could really try and you could find a great role where you have a handicap or this amazing script that challenges audiences, but unless you have a good director, someone who can tell the story and translate from what's on the page to the screen, it's lost. And that's I've seen that happen. I think we've all seen scripts that had potential that went nowhere. So for me, it's about the director. I want to be a part of good films. And not only is that what drives my decision, just for a purely selfish reason, I just want to be a part of quality work. But as an actor, it's so rewarding to trust your director, because you could do the fun of acting is exploring and trying things and stretching, and you're less inclined to do so if you don't necessarily trust your director. Because at the end of the day, they have the power to cut and edit your performance in any way. So if you do one take or one scene one way two or three times, and then you try the third take something a bit broader, the director and the editor have the ability to kind of string this performance together that maybe wasn't what you intended. So it's nice when you trust your director and they give you a note and they say, try it like this on the next one. And it's not what you thought you'd do, and it seems kind of strange, but I have so much confidence in this guy, I'm going to go explore a little bit and I'm going to try and stretch and maybe something amazing comes out of it. And that's where acting's a real treat. So when you have a director that you're just safe, when you feel safe with them, it's liberating. It's very educational.
You were recently, I think you filmed it in Hong Kong, you filmed Push.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that experience like, and can you talk a little bit about your character? You know?
Sure. Hong Kong is a tricky place to be for 3 months. I think it's tricky to be away from home when you're anywhere for 3 months. It's a science fiction movie. I guess it's science fiction action. It's very much like the show Heroes, which actually is a great show. It's a group of expatriates living in Hong Kong with special powers. Some are telekinetic, some are clairvoyant. The long story short, there's a branch of the government called Division who are out to kind of find these people and detain them. There's one girl, Camilla Bell's character, who is exceptionally powerful, threatens to kind of bring down that whole branch of the government, who is hiding in Hong Kong, and it's Dakota Fanning and Mai's job to kind of find her and help keep her hidden.
What was it like working with Dakota? And I'm just curious, is she aware of like some of the mocking stuff that people do like on SNL about her and stuff? Does she?
I'm sure she is, but she's like an alien. You forget that she's 13 years old. She's so mature. And she's wonderful. She's a phenomenal actress. Phenomenal actress. Nothing is lost through her age. She's not going to be one of those ones who's going to fall off after puberty. Her parents are unbelievable. Her heart is unbelievable. She's so kind to everyone, and it's so genuine. It's not this rehearsed, forced facade. She's like she's just an unbelievable human being. And you forget when you're speaking with her that she's a child, and you start saying things you probably shouldn't. And you have to really monitor yourself, because you just start looking at her as a peer, as an equal. You just, you know, like we're going through the same things. I'm 26, she's 13. She's unbelievable, and she's the real deal.
Would you do, looking for all the ways to stretch yourself now, would you do a third Fantastic Four movie? Is that something you'd be up for?
Well, they got me if they want me. We're all contractually obligated, so I guess shit out of luck there. I don't think there's going to be one. I think if there would be one, we would have heard about it by now. Uh-huh. So I tend to think they're probably going to let that one go.
What about the loss of a teardrop diamond?
Yeah, I did that right before I went to Harvard, right after this, went to Louisiana, and then after that went to Hong Kong. It's a Tennessee Williams piece. It's one of the only screenplays he's ever written. It's one of the only pieces he's ever written that hasn't been turned into a film yet. It was a real treat. You know, I come from a theater background, and a lot of the people involved are theater crazy. So it was pretty much everything an actor who likes rehearsals would love. We were down there, and Bryce Dallas Howard is the lead opposite me, and she's unbelievable. She will just rehearse until you cannot rehearse anymore. And our director loves Tennessee Williams and loves the piece, and is from the South, and it's a period piece. It takes place in the 1920s in Memphis. And so it was just, you know, we got to have dialects, and we got to have fun wardrobe, and it's a part that I haven't played before. He's this kind of very internal, very troubled, poor farmhand whose father's an alcoholic, whose mother is committed. He has a lot of social difficulties, issues, in a nutshell. So that was just a treat. It was so much fun. It was wonderful.
What's it like kind of being part of the whole young Hollywood type thing? Have you had to deal with any of the paparazzi or anything like that?
No, I really don't. I mean, you know, it's, I'm sure I'm never in like the Us Weeklies. I'm not really, you know what I mean? It's been great. I'm in the sweet spot right now where I'm able to work, and I get to do what I love, but you know, no one's waiting outside my door, and I can go out and have a few drinks and not worry about, you know, someone popping a photo of me smoking a cigarette. It's not a big deal.
Are you hanging out at the Ivy or on Robinson Boulevard?
No, I guess I don't go there. That's probably why. Yeah, that's true.
Two kinds of young Hollywood, though. Is there the kind that are, you know, really building careers and in it for the acting and for that experience, and those that are in it for the fame? And when you guys are all shoved in the same room, is it kind of weird to see that?
I'm sure there is. I don't know if they can be categorized by how they spend their off hours. For example, you could have someone who enjoys going to clubs and drinking and partying who's actually a phenomenal actor, right, and in it for all the right reasons. And by the same token, someone who never leaves the house, who wants nothing to do with paparazzi, but they're fame hungry beyond belief. So I wouldn't necessarily judge based on, you know, Us Weekly pictures.
How would you describe Disco?
He's got a chip on his shoulder. At least the backstory that David and I kind of worked up was, I think this is a kid who, this was the backstory we used, which I loved. I thought it was perfect. I think this is a kid whose older brother was a golden boy. This is his whole life he was probably Ben's younger brother. That's just who he was. And I think his older brother was the star football player, probably went to Harvard, probably just the object of his parents' affection. And I think this kid has just got a little something to prove. So, you know, and if you take him and put him anywhere else, he'd be the golden boy. You know, he's still a great guy. He's still talented and an overachiever, and probably will succeed at anything he puts his mind to, but has had to live in the shadow for a long time. And I think he's really eager to step out of that, which unfortunately ultimately leads to his demise.
In Street Kings, when was the time that you really had to stretch to get that feeling, that moment that you wanted? Did you experience that?
I know this is kind of the easy answer, but the death scene, it seems like a strange thing to try and dying, you know, dying. Mm-hmm. There's no way to know it's impossible. Like, I can't draw on any personal experience. I can't substitute anything. I have no notion of what it would feel like. You can only imagine it would be that shock of, I can't believe this is actually happening. I can't believe it's really happening. You know, I've been in a few car wrecks and things like that where you have that moment of disbelief. I cannot believe this is how I'm going to go. And it was tricky. The first couple takes, I remember I did it where I just got shot and just looked straight ahead. I thought that, you know, that fear would almost take over your entire face where nothing is happening and so much is going on inside. Your face is almost completely blank and you have a glossed over gaze and it just kind of would emit fear. And David, after two or three takes, came over and said, "Man, when Keanu comes down, you got to look at him. You got to look at him." And I said, "No, I think I should just look away." He's like, "Trust me, man. They look to you for help. They look to you for help." I said, "Jesus fucking Christ, babe." Okay, I'm looking at Keanu. Oh, good point. Good point. That's probably exactly what they would do. Mm-hmm. But that was tricky because you don't want it to be cliche. You don't want it to be, you know, I don't know. It was tricky. Death scenes are always tricky. You just want to make sure they're good and you want to make sure the people in the audience
feel it.
So were you able to leave that on the set or did you have to go home and shake it off?
You're a little shook just because I remember coming back to my trailer and my eyes ended up getting really bloodshot just from all the, you know, the exertion and you just look like a different person. We did the take a bunch of different times. By the time I actually got to go back and see myself just with all this blood and I looked like I was dead. It was definitely it was strange, but that's the thrill of acting. You know, you kind of get to step into something that you probably never would normally.
Let's hope not.
Yeah.
Have you encountered your co-star Jessica Alba since she got into the mommy zone?
No, I haven't. Good for her though. That's great. No, I haven't seen her.
She's always seemed to me like I've seen her with kids, and she seems like that really nurturing.
Oh, she'll be a perfect mother. It's probably what she's meant to do in this life. I mean, she really is incredibly maternal and incredibly caring, and she does put herself last with the people that she loves.
You guys, we have time for two more questions.
I wanted to know what else you might have coming up.
Nothing. I got nothing right now. I'm just trying to wait and be picky and make sure I make the right move. You know, I think at least where I am right now, a couple of missteps could be my last ones. You know, I just want to make sure that this is a marathon and not a sprint. So I think now is a time where I actually have to start, you know, being picky. They say your career is not based on what you do, it's what you don't do. So I'm trying to make sure the next one's something great.
Well, Easter's coming up. Are you going to participate in the Easter play at church? Maybe?
The Easter play at church. Wow, that's great. No, we're going to have a whole bunch of Easter games at my house.
Ah, yeah. An egg hunt.
Egg hunt, egg toss, egg races, you name it.
So with the directors and writers and movies that you've been a part of, is that something that you would want to maybe focus on later, and directing, writing, maybe?
100%. 100%. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you write? Do you just?
I do write. Still too insecure to show anybody, but hopefully that'll come.
You gotta let somebody see it.
I know. At some point, they're going to have to read it, so hopefully that'll come with age.
Sure.
Thanks, guys.